All right, coming up now, we have Rebecca Mosset in the studio. She is here to tell us about her upcoming one woman phenomenon, Looking at Abroad, which was postponed due to injury last year.
Yep.
Serious injury, but those things help us slow down and reflect and all that good stuff, don't they?
Yes,
so anyway, welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thanks, Gigi. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. So we'll start off by just tell the folks about Looking at Abroad.
Yeah, good memory. So Looking at Abroad is, it's a choreo poem of sorts.
Choreo poem. Let's define that for the folks.
So a choreo poem is a genre or frame of theater that has a lot of movement and poetic text sort of interwoven.
Mm.
Popularized by Ntozake Shange, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And for colored girls. So, it's a choreo poem. It's very much a dynamic, movement-driven piece. For me, it was really important to explore the way that oppression sits in the body and how we get it out of the body. And how the practice of traveling, for me, has been an exploration of trying to find home in myself, trying to find a place that felt like I belong, trying to find a place where all of the pieces of myself were sort of held and loved. And the journey of the piece is, it really comes to what it means to find home in one's body. Is that possible if you are someone who lives in the United States where having an identity that is anything but, you know, white, cisgendered, mm-hmm. male, and rich puts you at a disadvantage and puts you in a place of contention around your body, around the places your body can exist safely.
Mm. Yeah, those are a lot of kind of themes that are popping up in my own personal life these days. As,
yeah?
You know, someone that is kind of going on a journey away from New Orleans, a place that I have found home. And thinking about roots and, you know, root chakra and, like, going through this period of uprooting myself, actually, I, you know, was like, well, okay, I carry my roots with me. So this idea of your body is home, you know, the tortoise is walking around.
Yeah, well. What do you carry with you?
So go into more about, like, the carrying trauma and oppression, like, within, because it makes me think of, like, epigenetics.
I mean, there's all this really interesting research that's been coming out, right, about how, you know, we hold our ancestors' memories sort of inscribed in the DNA in our bodies and inscribed in our muscle memories and inscribed in our brain tissue. And I think I've always been a science nerd. I was a science nerd before I was a theater nerd. And so thinking about, you know, somatics and what is the body's way of carrying sorrow or love or intensely traumatic experience, how does that shift the way you walk?
Mm-hmm.
How does it shift the way you speak? How does it shift the way you breathe? And so all of that was part of what was explored with my choreographer and director in the process of devising and creating the piece. Looking at, you know, what is it? I'm like doing movements from the show because I'm like, I'm not on television. I'm on
It's okay.
Radio,
I like watching you.
Great. but, you know, what does it mean to, how do you move when you feel caged? You know, how do you move when you feel caged, but you don't want anyone to see that that's what you feel, right? In a moment of aggression, in a moment of oppression, in a moment of violence, how does that shift the way you walk, the way you speak, the way you engage with your body? Do you go inside yourself? Do you get bigger? Do you sort of slowly crumple? Like, how do these things happen? And how do they get tracked over the course of a lifetime? What are the echoes of those movements as you grow? What brings them back up again? So all of that, the way that the choreography is sort of woven into the piece is there's these almost like thematic scores that come up that are like, you know, strong pieces of choreography that are clear as one piece, but then pieces of them come back, right? And are triggered by things that happen throughout the course of the story. And shift to mean something different in a different instance. And sort of track that way.
So what are some of your creative and kind of editing processes? I'm sure there were things that you wanted to put in that you couldn't, or things that, you know.
Yeah, the script has changed so much over the last 2.5-3 years. I have a really amazing director. Her name is Ebony Noel Golden. She's based in New York. And she was a supreme help. I mean, we you know, devised this piece together in a lot of ways. I wrote it, but she definitely helped pull things out of me, and also was a really great mirror to be like, well, why are you saying this in the first place? Like, what are you trying to get at? Because there's a way we can get at this through movement. And then my choreographer, Audrey Hales, also based in New York, was like, okay, so we have this text, but maybe it could be better said in movement. How would you move this text? And so digging into it that way. And the editing process has been continuous. I rewrote another scene the other day. I was like, okay. I think for me and for a lot of theater makers, you don't know how something lands until someone sees it. So I've had a series of sharings over the last 2.5 years. I've had a reading, at least one of the full piece. I've had like tiny showings where I invite some friends to come into the rehearsal room and see what I'm doing and give me feedback. And then I go back in and you know, carve away. Ebony and I have spent 2 or 3 sort of intensives going through the whole material and just pulling it apart, being like, okay, what does this mean? What are we trying to say? Is the journey clear? Where is it not clear? What do we need to leave open? What are questions that we don't want to answer? What are questions that we do want to answer? Where can we explode this piece? How can we dig deeper here? Where are you being performative and not being honest about a story? Because, you know, I mean, the wonderful...
How would you take that? Would you...
I would make faces. You know, it's interesting because I feel like this, the piece is digging into Black identity, into my identity as a woman and into my identity as a queer person. And I think there are ways in which I talk about being Black and a woman and queer in my friend groups, right? And Ebony is a good friend of mine. So, like, in these ways that are not, that are like performative, because I'm a performer and I tell stories in the way that I do, that in the show, I was trying to wrap them up too neatly. You know, I was trying to package it in a way that was clean. Clean. And why? Right? Because our lives are messy and identity is messy and oppression is messy.
Yeah.
And violence is messy and it's dealing with all of these themes. So, and I think, you know, there's always the fear of being completely vulnerable on stage, you know, and being open enough to your audience to say, like, look at all of this stuff. Because it's a story about my life, right? Yeah. It's not made up. So, you know, opening that up to someone and being like, here's everything. I'm sharing my life with you artistically. So, like, aesthetically, I want you to like it.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm, in a sense, asking you to approve of my life. But I'm not, because the point of the story is about me being okay with myself without your approval. Right? So it's this interesting... tension that lies in any sort of, you know, I think solo performance in particular, but autobiographical performance for sure, where you're sharing your truth, but you're sharing it in a way to ask people to enjoy it, right? To get something out of it, sharing it as a way for them to connect with you and then potentially grow from it. So it's an interesting... exercise, and it means for me has meant much more rigor in the way that I pull the pieces of the story out that I need to share in order to get across my like thesis, you know. So,
how, what was it? I have like three questions. I'm like, which one do I want to ask first? Have you been able to perform it in, it's, I think you said you kind of like invite friends in and, but have you been able to perform it in its entirety no, not yet. Okay. And, when you tell us about like when you hurt yourself like that, what happened?
Yeah.
If you want to dig into
that.
No,
I will. It's cool. It's a good reminder. So
all right, get out the bag and
August 28th of last year. August 27th or 28th. I was in New York doing what was supposed to be the final rehearsal intensive with Ebony and Audrey, and doing a sharing of the piece. Actually, I had invited a couple of presenters and good friends who were up in New York. One of my designers, Melissa Cardona from New Orleans, was up in New York to see the whole thing. And there's an intense moment in the piece. There are many intense moments in the piece, but there's one particular intense moment in the piece where I'm jumping back and forth across a rope. And it's indicative of a lot of things, of border crossing, of trying to fit into a specific space, of running. And I jumped really high, and the dance floor buckled underneath my foot, and my Achilles popped. Like, everybody heard it.
Oof.
And it was in episode 4. It's now in episode 3, but then it was 4. And I like couldn't put my foot down. I couldn't feel like I got that pins and needles feeling all up my foot and into my ankle and into my calf. And I was like, I can't put my foot down. Like, what?
Wow.
And I was like, I think I just ruptured my Achilles tendon. And my friend Paloma McGregor was in the room, who's a dancer and choreographer, and was like, No, you didn't. That was the floor. I was like, no, I think it was the floor and my leg. So, you know, I freaked out. Everyone was really amazing. One of my friends, Zoe Flowers, who was there as a Reiki master and immediately started giving me Reiki. Like, I was surrounded by really great people. Ended up reading through some of the rest of the piece because I really just wanted to share it and get some feedback. They took me, we went and got drinks, a lot of drinks afterwards because I couldn't walk. They had to like carry me up the stairs. The next morning, came back to New Orleans. Yeah, it was the 29th. It was Katrina anniversary. And went to the doctor and they're like, yep, you ruptured your Achilles tendon. And I was like, oh my God. Like my show's in a month. I have another show I'm supposed to be in the month after that. I have another show I'm supposed to be in 3 weeks. I can't do any of it.
Wow.
And so went to my house and just like lost it for a while.
I bet.
Yeah.
And so how long were you kind of in?
6 months.
6 months.
Yeah, I started walking again in February.
And I kind of remember when you started walking in a little bit.
I started walking again in February. I started performing and I went on tour in April, mid-April, and then again in June, and was like, okay, I think I can do my show. And then started planning. I started planning for my show in April. I was like, I can do it. It might not be the same, but I can do it. And then in June, I was like, I will be ready. I will keep training and like get ready for this thing.
Good. I'm very happy that you have mended well. Do you feel 100% again, or do you?
No. I was walking here this morning from my car, and I was like, my ankle's so tight.
Oh, boy.
I have to go to yoga later. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those kinds of injuries that will be with me forever. Like, it will always.
Right.
I'll always feel it. My right calf is still a little smaller than my left calf. I haven't built the muscle back entirely. Mm-hmm. It can take up to 2 years to do that. Yeah. It's only been one. But I'm recovering better than most people who've had this kind of injury. So, and it healed faster. And the fact that I can jog and jump and do all these things now is usually unheard of. Like, people don't get there that quickly. So I'm doing great, but I'm not 100%.
Well, let's keep looking forward. But I also, one thing that we didn't kind of go into, there's so much that we could talk about.
Yeah.
And we only have a few minutes left, is like the travel part. So tell us about kind of that that journey, those journeys, looking for kind of senses of home and senses of, I guess, safety or security, like belonging, connection. I'm sure there's a lot of things that we are looking for when we're out there traveling.
So. Yeah. So I've been traveling since I was about 5. I've traveled to a lot of places. And
where are you originally from?
Originally, I'm from Zimbabwe. I was born in North Carolina. So the first time I left the country was to go back to Zimbabwe.
Oh, okay.
At 5, which I talk about in the show. Mm-hmm. And yeah, travel for me was definitely a means of escape. Mm. And
what were you escaping from?
The United States. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. in hindsight, that's what I was escaping. I was escaping from, you know, not feeling like I fit in here and not feeling like I was appreciated, not feeling like I was seen as valuable or beautiful or worthy of things. I always got treated better when I left. Mm-hmm. So I left. And, you know, curiosity and, you know, engagement and fun and vacation. And, you know, there's a lot of good reasons to leave, too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a period of time where I was going to stay abroad and not come back to the United States ever again, except to visit family. Mm-hmm. And realizing that a lot of that had to do with me not feeling safe here, and like, what does it mean, and what does it mean to feel safe, and thinking about, you know, my social justice awakening or whatever, but thinking about what it meant to be all of the things that I am in the United States, and what it meant to be myself somewhere else where it was safer, where, you know, being an American was in essence protecting me from the kind of physical, emotional, psychological violence that I would have experienced if I was here being myself.
And such interesting contradictions, right?
And also wonder, like, running up against those same things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so sometimes it being something that protected me and other times where it never protected me. And realizing that because of who I am, that it's only conditional. The protection of, like, American privilege is only conditional. The protection of American citizenship is only conditional.
Yeah.
So fuck it. Like, let me sorry. Beep. My bad.
It's okay. I think I caught it, but I did dump a whole 6 seconds because I do that just to make sure that we don't hear the cursing. There was a slip of the tongue, a little bit of a French accent.
My apologies. screw it. I'm going to, like, what does it mean to really inhabit myself everywhere and to do work that create space for other people to feel like they can fully be who they are, and own themselves, and do it in a way that doesn't feel combative or aggressive or victimized or, I don't know, that's just themselves authentically in love and, like, open and full. Mm-hmm. So that's what this piece was for me. Like, making it was both reflecting on and deepening my practice of doing those things.
Right on. Do you have any piece of it that you could share?
Oh!
If you're comfortable or if you want to.
Yeah, I could do that.
We'd love to. If you need a moment, I could put a music on for a few seconds. Cue it up or...
Yeah.
Shake it off or whatever you need. Whatever you need to do to...
Okay. Yeah. I will do... I will do a little part in the. This is from episode 3. this is actually the text. This is the text that sort of comes right after that rope jumping moment. Living in the United States is like breathing underwater. Daily, I pack my bags with masks. Always hoping to be prepared, always knowing that safety does not exist within these borders. I try to keep from wincing from every sound in my ear. What can blackness mean in a world of white construction? Nothing connects. no one connects to, and I'm left clinging to flags and false promises of humanity. Walking, always wounded. I tried to enter myself through each border I crossed. Each foreign checkpoint, each lover, another language, another food, something, anything, to bridge the unspoken gap between my crumbling body and myself. I went searching for an opening, a key to unlock my hunger. I can't breathe life into myself, so I search for somewhere else to take breath. Everywhere I go, there are only glimpses.
Thank you. That
You're
was
welcome.
Really beautiful.
Thanks.
Okay, so we've got a few minutes, just a couple minutes left. Looking at abroad, where is it going to tell
happen.
Us about the
Yeah,
run?
So yeah. It's happening at the theater at St. Claude, which is 2240 St. Claude, the back of the Always, from November 6th through the 22nd. So every weekend in November, except the last weekend, 6th through the 8th, 13th through the 15th, 20th through the 22nd at 7:30 p.m. It's part of the Faux Real Festival. Tickets are, can I tell people how much tickets are?
You can, I can't.
Okay. Tickets are $15 for adults and $12 for students, artists, and seniors. And if you go to Rebecca Mwase, MwaseRebeccaMwase.com, you can buy tickets. Because they're available. Buy them. Sell out the show. Do all the things.
And also, we wanted to give a special shout out to the Loud Queer Youth Theater. I actually interviewed some of the youth back when they did the first run of it. So they're going to, please, but what is it? The Pursuit of Justice is what it's
called?
Yeah,
The Pursuit of Justice. So we were invited by the UU Church on the North Shore to do a night of this performance again. So it's actually this Saturday night at 7:30 at the North Shore, Unitarian Universalist Society, which is 28662 Krentel Road, K-R-E-N-T-E-L, Lacombe, Louisiana, 70445. You can get tickets on Eventbrite. Or if you go to loudnola.org, you can get them off our website. But it's a one-night-only performance, and there are only about 100 seats. So,
all right. So get them, folks, if you want to go and see this powerful performance. And looking at abroad, November 6th through the 22nd at the St. Claude Theater over there in the back of the Always, please go and see it. It's a powerful piece, and It should be viewed and expanded upon, and all that great stuff that happens with beautiful works of art like what you're creating here.
Thanks.
So thank you for being a light out there, shining it on all the people.
Thank you.
Come back anytime. Rebecca Mwase, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Kahiji.
Coming up, we got Democracy Now! And the calendar in just a moment. Thank you.
a disclaimer. The views, opinions, and conclusions expressed on this show are not those of Tulane University or WTUL New Orleans. Fire!